You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Today is Thursday, May 9th. Why the president's son was just subpoenaed. The new thing drug companies will have to tell you on TV ads, and the first U.S. city to okay magic mushrooms, plus a big Bitcoin hack, the royal baby name, and Tyra Banks' comeback. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview that you'll want to share with every mom. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. More subpoenas, a contempt vote, and the president using his executive powers. The battle over the Mueller report is intensifying now. The Trump administration and House Democrats are going back and forth with neither side backing down. So let's start with President Trump using his executive privilege for the first time. The New York Times says that means he can shield the full report from Congress and the public. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler says it's unprecedented and goes against the Constitution. But the White House says Nadler is abusing his power. Then the House panel voted yes to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress for not handing over the report in the first place. Now it moves to the full House. The Justice Department calls the vote unnecessary. But there's now more to all of this. The president's son, Donald Trump Jr., has also been subpoenaed, this time by a Republican-led Senate committee. The committee wants to ask questions about the Trump family's dealings with Russia during the 2016 election, from their business plans to private meetings. Sources told CNBC Trump Jr. will likely join the others and fight this subpoena, too. Expect more to develop on this one. A new report from the CDC says more women in the U.S. are dying from pregnancy-related causes, and most of them could be prevented. CBS News says the death from pregnancy is still very rare in advanced countries, but the rate in the U.S. has continued to go up for decades, and it's higher in the U.S. than in other countries like Canada and Britain. The study found heart disease and stroke led to one-third of those deaths. Experts say providers need to better communicate risk factors and the signs and symptoms of problems. And they say high-quality care is important during pregnancy and birth, as well as after birth. Implicit racial bias in the healthcare system also needs to be addressed. We'll talk a bit more about this report as part of today's Thing to Know Thursday interview after the news. Denver, Colorado will become the first U.S. city to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms. In a very close vote, the unofficial results show the ballot measure passed. But the Denver Post says it doesn't actually mean so-called magic mushrooms are legal. Here's the deal. The measure means the drug should be a very low priority for police. That if anyone 21 and older has or uses mushrooms, the city will essentially look the other way. But buying and selling the drug is still considered a felony. And of course, it's all still illegal under federal law. Supporters say there's emerging research about potential health benefits of the mushrooms. Critics say it's adding to a dangerous drug culture in the area. Soon, when you see a prescription drug commercial on TV, you'll hear the cost of the medication along with that long list of side effects. Bloomberg reports for the first time, drug makers will be required to start putting prices in TV ads. So if a drug costs more than $35, companies will have to tell you, just like they already do with the side effects. It's part of a new rule from the Trump administration. ABC News reports supporters believe it'll help drive down the cost of prescription drugs and give more power to patients as they try to decide which medicine is right for them. On the other hand, drug companies say putting prices in ads will only confuse patients, making people think they have to pay the full price, when really discounts, rebates, and insurance could help pay for it. The rule should be finalized this week, and then companies will have 60 days to start including prices in their ads. All right, more news ahead, but first, a quick break for today's sponsor. America's beverage companies are working together to support families as they reduce the sugar in their diets. Coke, Dr. Pepper, and Pepsi are providing more great-tasting options with less sugar or no sugar at all, putting clear calorie labels on every product, and working with public health organizations and other national and local partners to build stronger, healthier communities. With more choices, smaller portions, and less sugar, American families can find the balance that's right for them. Learn more about how these three competitors are working together at balanceus.org. That's balanceus.org. Now back to the news. Starting this summer, you'll need to be 21 to buy tobacco from Walmart. CNBC reports the company is raising the minimum age in all of its stores. The FDA has apparently been pressuring the company to do this because regulators found Walmart was illegally selling tobacco to kids. Walmart says it's taking responsibility and making changes. And remember, Walgreens and Rite Aid have now also raised the required age to buy tobacco to 21. Hackers got into a cryptocurrency exchange and stole more than $40 million worth of Bitcoin. CNN reports Binance is a huge cryptocurrency exchange. It says hackers used phishing, viruses, and other attacks to steal 7,000 Bitcoins in one transaction. Wired reports hackers also got their hands on users' information, including two-factor authentication codes. So not good. Binance says the theft hit about 2% of its total holdings, but the good news is the losses are covered through emergency insurance, and the Bitcoins will be reimbursed. If you're sick of renting e-scooters, you can now buy a Bird scooter. But it comes at a cost. The new ride called Bird One is for sale for $1,300. The scooters come in three different colors, including rose gold. TechCrunch says the battery lasts twice as long as the ones you can rent, and they can cover 30 miles in a single charge. The Verge says the scooter tops out at about 19 miles an hour. And this is in addition to Bird's plans to offer monthly rentals in some cities as well. If you want to buy a Bird scooter, you can pre-order it now and have it by summer. She's still a cover model. Tyra Banks is on the cover of Sports Illustrated Swimsuit for the third time. She says she did it for everyone who's been told they're not good enough because of their body and their age. Banks is now 45. CBS News says she made history in 1997 when she became the first Black woman to have a solo cover for Sports Illustrated. The theme of this year's edition is Shattering Perceptions. It's also the first time the magazine has included photos of a model in a burkini and hijab. We have a name. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex named their baby boy Archie. His full name is a bit of a mouthful. It's Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor. Harrison simply means son of Harry, which makes sense since his dad is Prince Harry. People magazine says the name was a bit of a surprise. It's a little less traditional than some of the expected names like Arthur, James, or Albert. But Archie is a popular name in the UK right now. In fact, the BBC says Prince Harry and Meghan Markle decided not to give Archie the title of Lord or Earl, which is likely a sign they don't want to bring him up as a formal royal. Instead, he'll be known as Master Archie. There are also some new pictures released this week showing the baby's face and the family all together. Meghan said on camera, quote, "I have the two best guys in the world, so I'm really happy." And that's it for the main news today, but it's now time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. With Mother's Day this Sunday and the royal baby just born, I think it's the perfect time to talk about pregnancy-related issues, from that new CDC report out this week to postpartum depression, which has also been in the news this year. So even if this doesn't impact you or your family right now, I encourage you to listen, learn about it, and share this episode with anyone who is pregnant or had a baby or may have a baby. It may just be the best Mother's Day gift you can give. So we're spending just a few minutes with two people today, including someone who shares her own experience with postpartum depression. But my first guest is Dr. Allison Stubbe. She's a board-certified maternal-fetal medicine specialist, and she chaired the task force on reinventing postpartum care for the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And she has a long list of even more accomplishments and roles. So here's my conversation with Dr. Allison Stubbe. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with this new report that came out this week from the CDC that found that the rate of women dying from pregnancy-related causes in the U.S. continues to go up, and most of these deaths are actually preventable. So what are a few of the most important takeaways from this week's report, in your opinion?
So I think this really illustrates how we don't invest in families and moms in the United States. We're the only industrialized country in the world without any paid parental leave. For moms who are on Medicaid, many of them are kicked off health insurance at 60 days postpartum. And the result of that is if we don't take care of moms, they're not going to do well. And so I think it starts with listening to patients. I think that moms often know something's not quite right. And sometimes a clinician is busy or it's a busy day in clinic. And she says, "I don't quite feel right." And someone says, "Yeah, you're fine," and sends her out. And we need to pause. If a mom says she doesn't feel right, we better prove to ourselves and to her that she is okay before we send her out the door. I think we also need moms to know what's normal and what's not. And that's something that particularly after delivery, we give moms very little guidance about what's supposed to happen to them. We tell them all sorts of stuff about the baby, but moms were kind of like, good luck, we'll see you in 6 weeks. And that's just not enough.
And speaking of that postpartum care, you actually chaired the task force to provide updated guidelines 1 year ago for postpartum care. What were the most significant changes to some of those recommendations? Why are they important? And do you think they're being followed and making a difference over the last year?
So I think the biggest change was to move away from this idea that you could see a woman once 6 weeks after delivery and provide her with postpartum care. And so we really moved away from this idea of a one-off 40 days, good to go, to an idea that women need support across really the 12 weeks after birth as their bodies recover and as they figure out how to take care of their babies. As I like to say, it's like the baby's the candy and the mom's the wrapper. And once the candy's out of the wrapper gets tossed. And we really need to remember that the wrapper is a person and she needs to be cared for and treasured. And so that starts with the recommendation that the physician's office touches base with mom within 3 weeks of delivery or the midwife's office. And then with the idea that it isn't going to be just one visit for everybody, that moms may need multiple encounters to be able to get through that period and to really survive and thrive. The rate limiting step is that right now insurance only pays for one visit. And so we're asking care providers to do the right thing and we're not paying them for it. And so we really need payers to say, okay, we don't think moms should die. And so we're going to pay for care for them.
So let's talk a little bit about postpartum depression, because another news item that we've talked about here on the Newsworthy is that just in February, the FDA approved the very first medication specifically for postpartum depression. So what are your thoughts about it and how common is postpartum depression?
So postpartum depression is really common. It affects, depending on who you ask, somewhere between 1 in 10 and 1 in 7 new moms. And so everyone drinks a nasty sugar drink to screen for diabetes. That affects 5 to 10% of women. Postpartum depression is more like 12%. And yet, until recently, we weren't routinely screening for it. So it's a super common problem. And some of it probably relates to changes in hormones after birth. And that's where I think this medication is really intriguing. So during pregnancy, your progesterone levels go way up. And that means that there's more allopregnanolone in your brain. And allopregnanolone binds to the same receptor that Valium and alcohol bind to. So there's this sort of mellowing thing that's going on during pregnancy. And then when the baby is born and the placenta comes out, that allopregnanolone goes away. And so I like to say somewhat facetiously that all postpartum women are withdrawing from Valium because they don't have that hormone in place anymore. And so potentially it's correcting that hormonal transition. And I think it's going to be exciting to see how this plays out. You know, clinical trials are amazing. And then it's how does it work in real life? And I'm excited to see whether the outcomes are as good in clinical practice as they were in the studies.
And now I want to bring in Natalie Talotnikov, the founder of Better Postpartum. She's a certified postpartum care practitioner and is trained in perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. And she also experienced postpartum depression herself. You've experienced it personally, right? And that's really what got you into this career change. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I suffered from postpartum depression and anxiety after the birth of my first son, Max, in 2013. And I didn't even know it at the time. And that is because I, like so many women today, had absolutely no education and no awareness and no real understanding of, you know, really what postpartum depression or anxiety even looked like, or what a normal and healthy postpartum should look like, which I think is another thing that we need to give women access to so they can kind of see where they fall on that scale and how they're doing. So I personally suffered for over a year. I mean, it wasn't until my son was 15 months old that I finally diagnosed myself. I realized that women really need to be better educated about this so that they can catch it much earlier and be preventative and proactive about taking care of themselves so that they can take better care of their babies.
What is your advice to mothers and especially new mothers?
Well, I think the most succinct way that I can give mothers advice who are listening is know that knowledge is power. We have proof that postpartum education works. So if you become informed, you can become your own advocate, and it can really help you avoid these issues altogether or alleviate them if they should arise. So just having knowledge can really help reduce both the intensity and the duration of anything you may be going through if you do suffer from postpartum depression. The next piece of advice would be to know and really understand and take to heart that community is immunity from these things. So if you are seeking a postpartum support community, if you stay connected to mom groups, if you are seeking out therapy, postpartum support groups, either in person or online, that helps tremendously diminish the effects of these things or prevent them from happening in the first place.
And you can learn more about Natalie and her programs at betterpostpartum.com or read more about this topic and both of our guests today in today's show notes on thenewsworthy.com. That's also where you'll find links to all the stories we talked about in this episode. Just go to thenewsworthy.com, click episodes, and find today's date. Thank you so much for listening today, and thank you for sharing this episode. As always, The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday, so we'll chat again tomorrow. Have a great day.